This is New England Public Radio News. Academics in Amherst, Massachusetts have jumped on an unusual source of scientific and existential investigation, a brainless amoeba known as slime mold. This fall, Hampshire College launched what it calls the first Institute for Non-Human Scholars, and the organizers insist it's more than a gimmick. New England Public Radio's Karen Brown produced this story.
The academic invitation that went out to the single-cell species known as Plasmodium polycephalum, or slime mold, came initially from one man.
My name is Jonathan Keats, and I am an experimental philosopher. I've chosen that as a job title because I don't really entirely know myself what it entails.
Here's what I could figure out. Keats was a somewhat disillusioned philosophy major in college who gravitated towards big conundrums in science, politics, human behavior, things you could actually test, not just ruminate over. Through public thought experiments, he uses absurdity to make a point. For instance, he once opened a restaurant for plants where they could enjoy gourmet sunlight. He attempted to genetically engineer God in a laboratory. He made urban camouflage clothing for turtles and choreographed a ballet for honeybees.
You have to enter into this parallel universe, but it becomes a way in which then to reflect on our own world.
One person who finds this approach intriguing is Amy Halliday. She directs the art gallery at Hampshire College. Last year, Keats came to Halliday with a proposition, one that revolves around that amoeba I mentioned. She remembers Keats saying,
"Wouldn't it be great if we could invite slime mold to be visiting scholars to help us collaboratively solve human problems?"
The visiting slime mold scholars don't get a salary, but they do get their own dank office in the basement of the college's science building. That turns out to be an appropriate place, given that in the wild, slime mold lives on the dark, moist forest floor. If food is scarce, two single-cell slime molds will fuse together and break down the membrane between them. That goes on and on until it becomes what's called a superorganism, a mass of nuclei that all have the same DNA. Megan Dobro is a biologist at Hampshire.
They are at one time many and one, which is, to me, the evocative property about slime mold.
That's also what interested Keats. Remember, he's a philosopher, not a scientist.
That is to say that their mutual interest and their self-interest are one and the same. And we really need to think in those terms ourselves.
Beyond the appealing metaphor, slime mold also offers a great model for experimentation. If you sprinkle oats on a petri dish, the superorganism will seek out the oats, leaving a bright slime that reinforces the most efficient, equitable route from one source of food to the next. The method has been adopted by a field known as biomimicry, when solutions to human problems take their cues from nature. That's why some Japanese trains are shaped like the beak of a kingfisher, or how Velcro was inspired by thistles. Earlier this month, I went to a workshop at Hampshire College, where students and faculty, in true Hampshire tradition, were asking deep questions of the slime mold.
Thinking about why people do violent things, like, and why do they...
So if we can model in the slime mold a presentation of addiction at such a, like, molecular level...
I mean, it does relate to these issues of immigration that we were talking about.
So on one side of the wall, we're going to have, like, a population that has everything it needs.
But at least we can do, like, sugar and oats as, like, the quality of wealth.
This may sound kind of out there, but already scientists have used slime mold to model human infrastructure. For example, they got the collaborating cells to recreate the Tokyo subway system in a petri dish. Megan Dobro studies the spread of HIV, and she's wondering if slime mold can help governments figure out how to get medical care to rural populations. To simulate rough terrain or long distance, they could put salt or light in the petri dishes, things slime mold don't like.
If I took a map of Thailand, can I map the optimal situation for where public health clinics should be placed so that no one person has to travel more than 1 hour to get to a health clinic?
Amy Halliday came up with an experiment that's resonant for someone in my profession, mapping out the spread of fake news.
Since we know that they eat sugar, could we create or use a synthetic sugar, a sweetener, something that masquerades as sugar but isn't the real thing, and see if that could offer us a kind of microcosm for how fake news travels.
Or to model climate change in a petri dish, they can turn up the heat, introduce pollution, or create overcrowding, and see how the slime mold adapt and share resources. Dobro says she did wonder if this approach would be seen as a gimmick.
But humans have really messed up this planet in a lot of ways, and slime mold have been around for 500 million years and have been very adaptable, and I think it's important that we treat them with intellectual respect.
As a science journalist, I love this kind of thing. The symbolism, the potential to teach basic concepts about nature, science, and social policy. But isn't this the kind of kooky project that Fox News commentators would pounce on as an example of scientific conceit gone awry? Yeah, maybe, Keats says, but so what?
It's going to fail in a lot of cases. But I think that humor goes a long way toward genuinely engaging people in the underlying thought experiment.
But what about a college like Hampshire, which prides itself on giving students creative outlets, but is often under scrutiny for its non-traditional approaches, from no grades to removing the American flag from a flagpole last year?
It wasn't easy. We had to sell this project.
Halliday says that meant making a case to the college administration for the rigor of slime mold.
We wanted to make sure that this was also something that followed scientific principles.
They've set the bar a lot higher for slime mold than just withstanding public ridicule. If they get any new insights into, say, border policy or food distribution, they plan to show the results to the World Bank, the United Nations, and maybe the Springfield City Council. And even though it's not likely those institutions will base policy on what the slime mold tells them, Keats insists the message is more than a metaphor.
I recognize the absurdity of saying that slime molds should be put into the White House. I think that we can all agree that that would be a good idea, given what we currently have. But I'm not saying that they should directly be given that sort of power.
And yet, perhaps a little bit of brainlessness can go a long way. For New England Public Radio, I'm Karen Brown.
This story was originally performed at Live Art Magazine in Northampton, Massachusetts. Original music by John Townsend. For photos of slime mold, visit npr.net.